The word passion has a really interesting history, and it's especially connected to Easter. And so that's why we're calling this Easter Message Series Passion. But we're gonna find out exactly how and why that particular word connects to Easter in such a powerful way. If you just look up a dictionary, any dictionary definition of the word passion, some familiar meanings: a strong feeling of enthusiasm or excitement for something or about doing something, a strong desire or romantic feeling for someone. I actually cleaned that one up a little bit. So Merriam-Webster gets a little hot and heated on their second, some other definitions of passion right there. So it just felt like, all that Valentine's stuff we did last week was. But then another meaning, which actually has to do with the original meaning of the word, has to literally do with the sufferings and death of Jesus Christ. What's that? That, and that is in there. It'll be third. Usually it's third or maybe even fourth, or where they go under original meanings, but it is in there. So let's explore the history of passion here a little bit. Our English word has its roots, and as English, if you've ever studied, some English history stuff, we pull from everywhere. We're stealing from everybody, from Greek, Germanic, Latin. We borrow and take from everything. But our English word has its roots in the Latin passio, which means simply suffering. Its first recorded use in early Latin translations of the Bible that appeared in the 2nd century AD that described the final week of the life of Jesus that depict his sufferings and death. The Latin word was borrowed prolifically in Old English religious texts where its meaning remained exclusively theological. For hundreds of years, the word passion simply, specifically, if you heard that word, your mind would go straight to Easter. It would go straight to the Last Supper, to Maundy Thursday, to the crucifixion, to the resurrection. All those events that took place in what was known prolifically as Passion Week. And remember a few years ago, the Mel Gibson movie called The Passion of the Christ? That's why it was called that. Literally, the sufferings of the Christ. And it includes that whole week of all those incredible events that begin with the triumphal entry to Jerusalem that we always remember on Palm Sunday, the Sunday before Easter Sunday that inaugurates that whole week of these events that include Jesus cleansing the temple when he's kicking over tables and getting all the money launderers out of the temple and restoring it back to a house of prayer and worship. The dramatic events in the Garden of Gethsemane, the arrest, the trial, the crucifixion, all those things that take place in that action-packed last week before Easter, Passion Week. But when the Normans, a little more history for you, but when the Normans invaded Britain in the middle of the 11th century, their conquest infused thousands of French words, and passion began to develop broader meanings. Okay, leave it up to the French to take a word and find something romantic out of it. It's like, let's go from suffering to something a little more softer, a little more exciting. Their conquest infused thousands of words and began to develop broader meanings. The first new senses in English referred to martyrdom and physical suffering or affliction. And by the 13th century, passion was being used to refer to any strong desire or emotion. Okay, so this next thing might be a little silly for you, but it's what rings in my ears and helps me kind of make the bridge for the word passion and how it connects to suffering, yet what we feel strongly about. Because think about the things that you feel strongly about, that you really just want to make sure happen just right. And you'll go to any lengths to ensure that what you're passionate about takes place in the best way possible. Okay, so theologically speaking, this is the best way I can think of it. And so I've got to go to my Seinfeld roots. Okay, and so you remember who was sarcastically referred to as the soup Nazi, right? I mean, it was just everybody was just scared to go to that store, but they couldn't help it because they just loved his soup. But Kramer, everyone is always, you know, kind of getting on his bad side, but Kramer's the only one that really understands him and sympathizes with him. That famous line that describes how the chef is just so passionate around what he is creating every day for his loyal customers. You know, you suffer for your soup, Kramer says. And finally, somebody understands the chef's passion. You know, because that is, at the heart of it, what we feel strongly about. We're willing to take on whatever suffering might come along with that. And so I hope that kind of helps you bridge a little bit about the history of such a powerful word, a word that we throw around quite a bit. Now we kind of understand the roots of it. And I want to explore God's passion that begins in this season. And each Sunday between now and Easter, we're going to take one of these major events and really kind of break it down and look at it, not only in light of Christ's suffering for us, in the original sense of the word passion, but then also linking it to the contemporary sense of the word passion and seeing how God's passion for each of us calls us to live out our passions. And I hope come to find out and come to live out taking on whatever it takes to follow in the footsteps of God's passions, even if that brings some suffering and sacrifice into our lives. And so we're going to start really at the beginning, even before the beginning of the Passion Week, and see how Jesus' passion for us, see the seeds of how it started. And the fascinating thing about the Passion Week, if you study all four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you get different pictures, different perspectives, different snapshots of Jesus' life from all four authors. And it's really fun. It's one of the beautiful things about the New Testament. We see different views and different varieties. I mean, how many of you guys get all your news from one source? I'm all flipping between ESPN 1, 2, Fox Sports, TNT. I mean, it's fun to get different breakdowns from different sources. And that's what's so cool about Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. But one topic that they all include, because some include some parables, some don't, some include some parts of Jesus' life and ministry, some don't, but what they all come together on is including all the events of the Passion Week. Because that was the crescendo, the climax of Jesus' ministry. That's the action-packed one event after another that was just so crucial and so dramatic, filled with so much intensity all week long from one to another. So let's begin in John's Gospel, where we see that there's some interesting timing that kicks off the whole beginning of the Passion Week. And it has to do with one of Jesus' good friends, Lazarus. Hearing that Lazarus was sick, Jesus, mysteriously, at first, stalls and doesn't come to the rescue. You find out Jesus was intentionally waiting for Lazarus. He knew Lazarus was coming to the end, but going to give him an opportunity to do something really big. When he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days, and then he said to his disciples, "Let us go back to Judea." Lazarus and his sisters lived in Bethany, a little suburb of Jerusalem, in the Judean countryside. But the problem was Jesus' wanted poster was hung up in every post office and every corner in that whole area. And the disciples were very glad to not have anything to do with that area. And this was their response. "But Rabbi, a short while ago the Jews there tried to stone you, and yet You want to go back? And so Jesus knew that the timing was coming. And he was not only waiting for this opportunity to do this huge attention-getting miracle and bringing Lazarus back from the dead, but this, he wasn't going to just slip into Bethany and then go back outside the Judean countryside. He was going to press into Jerusalem. But nobody wanted anything to do with going in that direction. I love the way Thomas responds to Jesus wanting to go back to Jerusalem. It's like, which was just, you know, it's just this pessimistic. I mean, you got to read this verse in Eeyore's voice. Then Thomas said to the rest of the disciples, "Let us also go, that we may die with him." You know, because he knew what was coming. But the great thing about Thomas, the great thing about Eeyore, for crying out loud, is how loyal, of even so pessimistic, how loyal up to the end a friend and a companion that Thomas was. Thomas knew. You know, I mean, he got the nickname Doubting Thomas because he was a bit of a pessimist, but he was a realist. He knew exactly what they were getting into if they went in that direction. So that's the mood. That's the mood of the disciples. Okay, we've come this far. We're not going to abandon our rabbi, our leader, the Son of God. He's proven so much to us. But this is a one-way ticket into Jerusalem. We pick it up in Mark chapter 10. So they're on their way to Jerusalem with Jesus leading the way. And I just love, can you picture these guys just dragging their feet in that road dust on the way to Jerusalem? I mean, they're just like, you know, kind of just lollygagging. Who wants to go there? But I love that Jesus, he's got that focus. He's got that passion that he knows his mission and he's going to pursue it no matter what gets in the way. And look how crystal clear he knows it and sees it coming. They're on their way up to Jerusalem with Jesus leading the way. And the disciples were astonished while those who followed were afraid. It's like, are you kidding? I can't believe he's doing this. And all of their contingent was just freaked out. Again, he took the 12, took 12 of them aside, his closest disciples, and told them what was going to happen. If they had any doubt at this point of what the specifics might entail, he took all that away. Listen to this. "We're going up to Jerusalem. And the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the teachers of the law. They will condemn him to death and will hand him over to the Gentiles, who will mock him and spit on him, flog him and kill him. 3 days later, he will rise." How much you want to bet? I mean, if I heard that, I think if any of us heard that, we would have heard everything but that last part. I think they were pretty tuned out around the death, mock, spit, flog, and kill. I mean, it was like that was enough to go, okay, and be overwhelmed. Because nobody saw that after 3 days coming. But you turn the page in the story a little bit, and you even see Jesus lets, in a conversation with his disciples where they're together, they're huddled close, he lets his heart out and his emotions, and he wears them on his sleeve, because they're all, "Jesus, we still have time. We can turn this thing around." And he's honest with him. He goes, "Look, now my soul is troubled. And what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour? No, it was for this very reason I came to this hour." But this is still before any of these major events take place. The disciples are still trying to talk Jesus out of it, but I just want you to see that resolve, that focus. And even amidst that anxiety, "Now my soul is troubled, and what shall I say?" And this is the most fascinating thing about the God we worship. That he would step into human form and somehow, and good luck figuring this out, somehow maintain that divinity, yet empty enough of it, which is how the New Testament describes Jesus emptying that divine power and wrapping himself in human flesh and feelings, to where he feels and felt the same fear, anxiety, worry that we're so often susceptible to. He's feeling that. Yet, in the midst of that tug of war, that resolve, that focus, that peace, to press on, knowing what he's going to go through, knowing what the cup that he is going to partake of, that just lays hours and days ahead of him. Can you imagine walking into hostile territory like that? You know, there's a new movie out, and I was hoping I'd get a chance to see it before Sunday so I could like talk a little bit about it, but I haven't been able to see the new Jesse Owens movie just yet. But when I was a kid, I fell in love with characters like Jesse Owens and Jackie Robinson and these pioneers, these athletic pioneers who just broke down incredible barriers. I remember writing a biography about Jesse Owens and just marveling. You know, it's one of my first exposures to the whole World War, II arena, and these are the real, speaking of Nazis, these were the real bad guys, and they were, just on the rise. But Hitler already had an international reputation for racism, and Jesse Owens was being warned about what he was getting into. And it was causing him and his loved ones, much anxiety and worry going into a hostile arena in 1936, even. But it's Nazi Germany, Berlin is hosting the Olympics. The amazing thing, because he stuck it out, he persevered, he showed up, and he walked away with four golds, which until the 80s was a record. And even though he never made a fan out of Adolf, it's amazing how he won over the German people. Just were blown away to even see him show up and compete, let alone show off such incredible excellence and athleticism and do it with such poise. And so, anyway, so many of us, maybe we're not walking into that kind of a hostile arena and environment, hostile territory. However, we have our own. And maybe you're facing something in your life, maybe this week. Maybe you've been avoiding and putting off because of the stress that it's causing you. Maybe you have a wall up, and maybe it's something that you've been able to keep a wall up for a very long time because you didn't want to deal with that person or that issue or that place because of the fear, the anxiety, the stress it was causing you. And the beautiful thing when we look at this part of the Passion story and what we see all throughout in Jesus' heart and hearing his voice is this peace, this coolness under pressure, going up against hardship that we'll never most likely face, although we face stress and hardship in our own levels. Yet how did he do that? That's what just always just marvels me. I want to be like that so bad. I want to be able to face pressures and challenges and doubt and pain and the unknown in a way like Jesus does. And so how can I do that? And when I look at his life, I see three solid ways that he always approaches every challenge. And so I want to talk about those a little bit. And maybe these are ways that you can apply, we can all apply when that road sign does say danger ahead. And we don't want to deal with that confrontation. But we know we're going to eventually. We can't put it off forever. And the first way, it sounds so easy and simple. It might be simple, but so many times we can rush into a challenge and totally leave God out of it. It's so easy to strategize, to plan, to rehearse what I'm going to say, how I'm going to deal with this issue. And a long time ago, it's been so long since my buddy Tony kind of led by example in this, and I still forget so often to rush in this direction. But it made such an influence on me when a friend of mine basically was going through, I got to see him go through a very stressful time. But what carried him through that was each day starting off with just a simple little giving that up to God. And just bringing him just in simple, casual, informal ways. And so many times when we think about prayer, we think, you know, it's got to be something formal or official or anything like that. It's not. It's just conversation between you and your Heavenly Father, your best friend. But I love the way King David puts it here. Hear my prayer, Lord. Listen to my cry for mercy. When I'm in distress, I call to you because you answer me. Because hopefully you'll answer me. Because sometimes you answer me. It's just this confident statement built up from experience that you answer me. When I call on you, you answer me. And I know when I remember to put that in place, and it's kind of a joke that me and Denise have at home, where I'll rush in and I'll say, hey, I finally remembered to pray about it. And it's like, and it just, you know, and don't tell anybody this. It happens a lot with these messages. It's like, I think I'll get a great idea and I'll get really stuck around Thursday, Friday, and I'll just can't realize, you know, why in the world is this not, you know, making any sense to me? Jeez, I forgot to pray about my Sunday message. And I'm not kidding. I mean, and I want you to try it if you haven't in your place of work, in your family. Because for me, God's got this crazy track record with all of a sudden, if I just spend a few minutes talking about, you know, Lord, you led me to this passage and I just love this, but I moved on from you and I need to come back to you. Help me, you know, connect the dots here in my heart, for our church family. And then it all of a sudden just gets easy and flows and becomes fun again. And it's weird. Well, I hope it's fun and easy and flowing right now. It's for me. I hope you guys are enjoying. But just remembering to start off. I know it sounds so simple, and if you've got that down, then great job. Help the rest of us. But so many times we just curl up in our own set of strengths and abilities and we leave God behind. And so keep God involved in a simple little conversation going into that meeting, that presentation, that review, that, you know, that tough neighbor, that difficult relationship. Bring God into that hostile environment to prepare you and to give you that peace. That's what we see Jesus always doing. Then what we always see him doing, he never takes on any of this stuff alone. And we're going to see more of this every week as we get into episode by episode of the Passion Week. And again, it isn't, I'm going to Jerusalem, guys. You do whatever you want. It's like, we're going there. And we've spent enough time together to where you know we can do this. And I need you guys. And we're going to see times where he, plain as day, says, I need you guys here with me. I want you here with me. And so there's never this, hey, I'm going to go this alone. Even Jesus, the Son of God, God in the flesh, wanted and needed companions and shared the burden of the passion, the pain, the suffering that He was going to undergo. And I love this proverb. So King David's son, King Solomon, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for a time of adversity. I just love what that says. I mean, that's, you know, you might be friends on a certain level, but then when things get tough, when things get hostile, when adversity rears its ugly head, that's when you become family. That's when friendship goes to a new level. But it only happens when we open up and we share, hey, this is what's going on with me. And I really don't want to go it alone. I need you. And then that's when our relationships really, really grow. When we open up and share. Do you have somebody to share your adversity with? Do you have somebody like that in your life? Pray about it. And then share it. Whatever is that conflict and that stress and pressure that you're walking into, don't just keep it to yourself. And I hope you have a place to connect. We've got a few groups around our church, and or even if you're just looking for somebody one-on-one to connect with, that's what being a church family is all about. We need each other. If Jesus needed people around Him, how much more do we? But then you see something else. Not only is Jesus keeping His Heavenly Father involved in every aspect of His life and every challenge, and not only is He surrounding Himself and opening up to friends so that He's not going through anything alone, but He's always remembering God's truth and God's track record. And do you remember, it's back in the Gospel of Matthew when we see this series of temptations that Jesus confronts Satan in the desert, and Satan challenges Him with all these things. And every single time Jesus responds, He doesn't come up with His own stuff. I guess theologically you could make an argument, but he quotes from Scripture. And four times in a row, every time He starts off with, "It is written." And, you know, and I love the way that the first one says, "Man shall not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God." And every word that comes from the mouth of God was such a big deal to Jesus. But I just think that was the third and final piece that made it so much easier for Him to keep that focus. He was so well aware of God's work and track record in history, in human history. And He applied it to His own individual life constantly. And I want to share, these are a few of my go-tos, because I think we all need to be able to remember some go-to verses that give us that lift, that give us that courage, that resolve, that focus, so that we can be reminded of God's power and His commitment to us and His involvement in so many lives. There's Isaiah 41, and it's a simple, "Do not fear, for I am with you. Don't be dismayed. I'm your God. I will strengthen you and help you." And I just love how it's I and you. It's just me and you. I'm there for you. So, Rick, quit stressing. I'm here for you. I haven't forgotten you. And I'll give you the strength and help you need at every turn. Philippians 4:13. We did this one together a few weeks ago. "I can do all things through Him who strengthens me." Joshua 1:9. Joshua's knees, you could hear them knocking. After Moses died and Moses' greatest lieutenant, Joshua, is now promoted to take it all on. God has to tell him to be strong and courageous about 17 times in one chapter. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but like five. Have I not commanded you, Josh, Rick, pal, be strong and courageous. Don't be frightened. Don't be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. And then, to me, just the one that just gets me through so much, there's no fear in love. Perfect love drives out fear. Am I letting myself be loved by God? If I do, it just displaces. Who was it? Archimedes? Who was the guy that, the bathtub guy? That just, when he figured out, if he sat in the bathtub, that's Archimedes' principle, right? Should have had a slide for this, it would have been brilliant. Yeah, Archimedes principle. And so he displaces the water. It's like that with God's perfect love. It displaces the fear. It takes up the place. It drives out that fear, insecurity, and anxiety. You know what? These four get me through a lot. It's not like you got to memorize the Bible. One of these usually does the trick for me. But I mean, these are my go-to. Do you have some go-to scriptures? Some "it is written." And the reason that it's written is because it works. It's got a history behind it. God did lots of stuff. Jesus did tons of stuff. Not all of it got wrote down. Remember John's last line of his gospel? If you try to write all this stuff down, you guys, it wouldn't fit in all the books and all the libraries in the world. This is the best, but I mean, this stuff's just proven. Okay? It is written. It works. Hang on to it. Pray, share, remember when you're entering hostile territory. It will get you through. And all of a sudden, you'll have this joy and this freedom and this peace like Jesus had. And I just want to close with this passage from the letter of Hebrews that really, I think this is probably going to show up in the next few weeks throughout this series, because it just really speaks to this whole idea of Jesus' passion for you, for each of us. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross. Do you know what that joy is? Yeah, it's you guys. For all of you guys, for all of the neighborhood church family, set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, laughing it off, scorning its shame, whatever. I mean, that's just the biblical way of saying whatever. I'll deal with whatever comes along. And sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Now consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Consider the passion he had in his passion, throughout his passion. The drive, the excitement, the enthusiasm, the joy amidst all the suffering. So that when you grow weary, you won't lose heart. You won't be intimidated. You won't be full of doubt or fear, but you'll have that same resolve and joy and strength that carried Jesus through his passion.